Welcome back. Linda Zimmerman with us. George Norrie here. Linda, back to the animal reactions to UFOs for a moment. You also mentioned ghosts and earthquakes. They're very sensitive about all these things, aren't they?
Yes, they definitely are. And for thousands of years, people have been reporting all kinds of animals giving warning to impending earthquakes. And modern science really didn't like that. They just would say it's anecdotal evidence. But anecdotal evidence is often how science begins. You start with these stories and you research it. So about 2 years ago, the Max Planck Institute in Germany started studies they called biologging. They put tags and sensors on all kinds of animals and noticed their movements. And sure enough, hours, days, sometimes even weeks before a strong earthquake, the animals would be reacting, you know, running away, agitated, and studies like this are beginning around the world, and they're finally, you know, putting it in the textbook that yes, whatever it is they're sensing, they can indeed sense earthquakes.
If you were a scientist, how would you monitor animals in order to pick up the possibilities of things happening?
Well, I like the idea of what they're doing with the biologging. One other study is using simple trail cams. You know, the things hunters put out, and when an animal goes by, it takes a video of them. And they were seeing within the days before a major earthquake, the animals were leaving the area, so that by the time the earthquake struck, all the animals had gone already. Very simple, low budget, but, you know, the idea is you need to pay attention to these animals and find ways to study them. There was a great case in 1975 in China where all of these snakes started, they said, slithering out of their winter hibernation dens. And the people in the city took notice of this. So they, well, if the snakes are leaving, maybe we'd better evacuate. And sure enough, they had a 7.3 earthquake. And people would have died had they not paid attention to the reactions of the animals.
Well, you remember there's 200,000 people who died in the Indonesian tsunami. The lions and elephants and tigers head for the hills.
Absolutely. When the animals are running, pay attention and be right behind them.
Absolutely. You know, law enforcement has used tracking dogs for years whenever they're on an investigation. They're everywhere.
I didn't hear you on that last one.
Oh, you broke up on that. Yeah, I was saying law enforcement has used animals for years.
And I think field investigators should start as well, because, you know, take something like, you know, a police dog, their ability to smell, to hear. And one thing we didn't get to touch on was their ability to sense magnetic fields. It's something called magnetoreception. And every mammal, insect, fish has it. And, you know, we've heard time and again how UFOs interfere, you know, the electromagnetic interference, cars and TVs and radios. So I think we can establish that whatever UFOs are have these strong electromagnetic fields. And if you have an animal that is so sensitive to that, This would be very disorienting and upsetting to them as well. So there's a lot of reasons why investigators in an active sighting location should have a UFO dog with them.
Absolutely. How does an animal react to a magnetic field? What do they show?
They show disorientation. They I've many cases of them running into things, not knowing where they're going. Birds are phenomenal magnetic receptors. They have cryptochrome proteins in their eyes, which physically allows them to see the curvature of these magnetic fields. And we've seen, well, even before earthquakes or UFO activity, birds literally dropping out of the sky or flying into things, flying into cars and windows, and because their whole framework, their network that they navigate by, is disrupted.
To the phones we go, Mary in Tehachapi, California, to get us started. Hello, Mary.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Linda, I used to live in New Jersey back in the 80s, and I used to go up to Pine Bush with Ellen Crystal. I'm sure you must know her. She did a lot of researching up there. And on one occasion, we were standing by a field, and we saw what appeared to be ground fog, except all of a sudden, the whole body of the ground fog moved at once, moved towards us, stopped, and backed away. And we snapped pictures at that point, and what came on our pictures looked like laser light shooting from the ground. Yet there was nothing in front of us. There were no fences. There was nothing. And I've had numerous strange experiences up there in Pine Bush, so I know of what you speak.
I'm so glad you called. I would love to see those photos if you still have them, if you'd like to get in touch with me. But, yeah, Ellen Crystal was really the person who put Pine Bush on the map with her book Silent Invasion. And this was exactly what I was talking about, things happening at ground level, things coming in and out of the ground. It's just remarkable. I wish I could tell you why Pine Bush, but I have no idea how you explain something like that.
Linda, what's the activity near Hudson Valley these days?
We have a lot of smaller triangular craft. Rectangles have become more prevalent. There's still a small percentage. I think there's still only 1% of the total sightings, but rectangles, a lot of what are just described as orbs, you know, orange or bright red, fiery looking orbs that don't just shoot across the sky. They follow patterned flight. Unfortunately, drones are also becoming more prevalent. They are the bane of ufologists'
yep.
existence. But still, the last 2 years, I'd say, activity is beginning to build again.
Has this region shown an increase in abductions or disappearances of people?
I have not heard of abduction cases lately. I think the major abductions were in the 70s, 80s to mid 90s. There's still the occasional one.
It's slowed down for some reason.
It has. It's very unusual because it was here. I hesitate to use the word, but it was almost common. And I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds of abductees I've interviewed. And those are the ones willing to speak. And you know, some people will never talk about their experiences. But what happened? What happened to all this abduction activity?
And there was lots.
An enormous amount. Far more than I had ever imagined.
And the cases were huge. The Travis Walton cases, Fire in the Sky, the Betty and Barney Hill cases from the late 60s. I mean, these were major cases. We don't hear those anymore.
No, and I don't understand it unless they've refined their techniques so the people have no recollection whatsoever. but certainly here in the Hudson Valley in the 1980s, it was a frightening amount. People being taken from their homes, their cars, walking down the street in broad daylight. And as I said, I can't recall the last case someone has reported to me.
Next up, Joe in Long Island, east of the Rockies. Hello, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Wendy. I have two questions. My first is just what I found a little bit bizarre is the role of sound in, say, Africa. For example, they say those lions, when they roar, you can clearly hear them 5 miles away, the roar of a lion. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that, you know, having such having basically, you know, an animal's sound travel 5 miles. And then, you know, on your sightings, I would speculate that nobody is on these ships at all. The sighting you described, that it's some sort of a craft that's controlled maybe by beings that are elsewhere or just self-sustaining. But within that, have you heard of people claiming to be hybrids? Or even, you know, where someone thinks somebody else is a hybrid in your area?
I'll work backwards. Yes, I have heard people claim to be hybrids or believe they have had hybrid children because they're suddenly pregnant and then obviously sometimes, unfortunately, suddenly not pregnant without any you know, signs that they miscarried or anything. The fact that there may not be beings on these craft, absolutely possible. How they could be controlled remotely is probably a simple thing. If you can get here, how by, you know, whether it's distance or through dimensions, certainly remote controlling a craft is no problem. And then the lion sounds, that's fascinating. I remember hearing about whales before all these propeller noises were in the ocean. Whales could be heard for hundreds of miles. You know, their sound would carry through the water. So, you know, there was a great system of communication long distance with animals in nature, and that sense of that also goes to their sense of hearing. So when a dog, you know, is going crazy, reacting, and it's several minutes before a craft is seen, are they hearing it at a distance of 2, 3, 5 miles? That's certainly possible.
Incredible research here, Linda. As you were saying, it took you years to compile to put this together. Did you have any roadblocks?
Just having the time to do everything I wanted. Some people needed to be coaxed, I guess the real roadblock was initially convincing people it's okay to come out and speak, because when I started this, there were no congressional hearings or Tic Tac videos, or, you know, there was a much bigger stigma, and I had to just let people know I am not going to expose your name and information, you know, and to try to build that trust. So once I established that, people felt much more comfortable coming forward.
What do you think of NASA calling for a committee investigation?
I applaud it. I think it's so several decades overdue. I watched that announcement. I believe they said their total budget for the project is about $100,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Chump change.
Yeah, that's, you can pay that for a hammer in the U.S. government.
Yeah,
so
it's a toilet on the International Space Station.
Right. So I'm glad they're thinking along those lines publicly, finally. I mean, it's not as if their astronauts haven't been telling them since, you know, the days of the Mercury Project. So to finally publicly talk about it, I think that's the step we need to take positively here and not pin our hopes on the results.
Isn't there a nuclear reactor out there in the Hudson Valley area?
Yes. Indian Point. It is now being decommissioned, but was started in the 60s.
It's an oldie, isn't it?
Yes. And it was the hottest of hot spots. It's right on the Hudson River, just about 30 miles north of Manhattan. And there were some unbelievable sightings there. July 24th, 1984, a massive silent triangular craft about 15 feet over one of the reactors. The guards come running out with their guns, and they decide this is not a smart thing to shoot at this object. Of course, the guards were all told to be silent, but this happened so many times. I interviewed one woman who lived the next town over, and she said, well, when we had nothing to do, we'd go to see if the UFOs were out. It was the thing to do. You're almost complacent about it because it happened so often. And you know, when officials tried to say, oh, it was the formation of planes or ultralight. Really? You're letting little ultralight craft fly directly over highly controlled airspace? It just didn't make sense.
What are the stone chambers out there in the Hudson Valley?
The stone chambers are very controversial. They're these corbel-roof dry stone construction, no mortar, giant slabs, and historians say they're simply colonial root cellars. Well, there many of them are oriented to astronomical alignment, like winter solstice sunrise, the only day of the year sunlight will come in and illuminate the back wall. I don't know of too many potatoes who required storage in a winter solstice alignment. And so many people think they're much older and for some sort of ceremonial purpose. And during the 1980s, when Hynek came to find out what was going on with this Hudson Valley wave, he was talking to a local resident who happened to be a Ferrari mechanic and who was fascinated with the construction of these chambers. And Hynek asked him, is there something unusual about this area? What's different? And the man replied, I don't think this is connected. However, a lot of the sightings are concentrated directly over the sites of these stone chambers.
That's interesting.
Now, I don't think aliens built them, but I think it's something to do with the electromagnetic field where these sites were built.
There's something there. Linda, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast.